Welcome to Trending with Timmery. Here are your hosts, Timmery Millington and Don Johnson.
Hello, dear friends. In studio with me is Don Johnson. He has been traveling the country, really addressing issues of human sexuality, which are regular issues here on Trending. However, he's really promoting his movie Unprotected right now. So if you want to hear a little bit more about the updates there, you can go and check out the live feed on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube where we discuss. But if people are interested in watching the movie, screening it, where can they find you?
Unprotectedmovie.com is the main place to go. It has all the listings where we are, and it also has some very handy links for how to bring that to your town, to your parish, to your theater. It's all very easy and frankly very cheap, so it's not going to cost you millions of dollars to bring it to your town.
And young people love this movie.
You know, we were just talking before we went on air, Timmery, about so last night I came in from Bakersfield. We had over 200 people there, a sold out show, and they brought a lot of high schoolers and college age. And you think, to a documentary, a historical thing, I mean, are they really going to sit through the whole thing and not start, you know, snoozing or being on their phones? They were into it, and they came up after and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, they're putting their pennies together to buy a DVD for the group of them. It was really cool. So, yes, young people are affected by the film, which is really encouraging to me.
Well, because it talks about sex, and it talks about it truthfully, and it talks about the harms when we go wrong with sex, and we're looking at a generation who have face sometimes at this point multiple generations now of divorce, remarriage, sexual promiscuity, maybe even abuse within the home, you name it. You're seeing a culture who has faced the reality of the sexual revolution having gone wrong.
Yeah, and when they see it explained, like when they see, where did this idea come from and why are you feeling that pain in your life? And when people don't listen to you or ask you questions, should you feel guilty about mm-hmm. that? And all of these things that we address in the film, often from the adult perspective, right, and from a historical perspective, the kids are like, oh, yeah, that's my voice. Like, oh, I get it now. And it's making sense of all of their experiences. And so you're right. I mean, they come out of it saying, I don't want to go down that path. I'm not interested in feeling that pain anymore. And if this is an answer, and we do have young people in the film who've been through it, lived it, you know, got the T-shirt and said, we're not going back to that. I think it is revelatory for them.
So here's a kind of feminism. It's always so interesting because a lot of men feel like they have to advocate for feminism, and a feminism that is pro-abortion, pro-contraception, and not very family-friendly necessarily. And, well, we have one great example of that this past week as the French president, Emmanuel Macron, has come out basically talking about, hey, he says, present me the woman who decided, being perfectly educated, side note, whatever that means, so being perfectly educated, that this woman decided to have 7, 8, or 9 children. Present me with her. What the heck is
It's amazing, isn't it? So many sort of cultural presuppositions caught up in one little off-the-cuff comment. And I'm sure, I don't think he thought about that much. I bet it's just one of those things where, well, of course, we all know that if you're ignorant, backwoods, living in Alabama somewhere, you're probably a child bride who was kidnapped or something, right? You know, like this, I mean, those are the only people in the world who would ever just have a bunch of children. You know, it's like that Margaret Atwood, Handmaid's Tale sort of deal it's like, If we're forced to have kids and nobody who has the freedom and the education that they're supposed to have would ever decide, oh, yeah, I'm going to have kids. I mean, what an ignorant statement, though, right?
Because, of course, educated people know that instead of having kids, you should just kill them. And instead of having children, you should just basically neuter your body and, you know, kind of just expose it to emotional issues with hormonal contraception that are very real, anxiety, depression issues, blood clotting, the abortion breast cancer link, and that high elevation, essentially, breast cancer among women who are taking the pill. Like, are you kidding me? Are you telling me that only smart people know to kill their babies and neuter their bodies? Like, come on.
You know, it is really tied into, we were just talking about unprotected, it really is tied into that message that we've been told as a society for several decades now, like 60, where, oh yeah, for women to be truly free, they need to alter their bodies, they need to become more like men, not just men, but promiscuous sort of bad men, right, who use right. other people. That's the truly freedom-giving, educated way to go for women. And only those ignorant ones would accept the way they're made, accept that they have dignity and beauty as they are made, and live life in accordance with how they're made. Oh, only ignorant people. Well, you look at not only the physical effects, but all of the emotional, psychological, societal effects that has wrecked. And it makes me think, who's really educated here? Like, who's actually looking at the facts of the situation, whether it's the science as far as just the physiology?
Right.
Right. I mean, the effects of the pill. My wife and I, we didn't know any better. We didn't grow up Catholic. And so when we got married, we did what all good evangelicals do. She went on the pill. She got off that thing within a month because it was disastrous. Like, just physically, we could obviously see, wow, the pill has really been bad for us.
Right.
Just physically.
Well,
and you're like, that's the facts.
And a lot of men today don't even want their partners, girlfriends, whatever you want to call them, on the pill because emotionally, that woman is chemically changed. Her body's in a state of pseudo-pregnancy. It's pretending it's pregnant, and that's impacting every single day on a different way her biochemical makeup. And that's hard to manage your emotions and your reactions to things when your body's being pumped with these hormones.
Yeah, you'd think we'd want to live clean, natural, you know, organic lives. No, let's put synthetic hormones. No, it's terrible. So it makes me think that actually the French president here is the one who's not educated. Like, you're actually the one, sir, who is ignorant about this.
Yeah.
And the response online was pretty fantastic, wasn't it?
It's been fantastic. I mean, woman after woman, even men posting pictures of their wives like, hey, Harvard grad, 9 kids, Yale grad, 10 children, like one after another, nurse practitioner working in the late evenings, like kind of just talking about these different breakdowns of women who maybe they have left their career to raise their children, or maybe they're working their career part-time, or maybe they've entered back into the workforce after having raised their children.
Well, and the fact is, the educated one. So if you want to see something funny, it's hashtag postcards for Macron. I can't remember who started this, but all of these super educated women who have big families asking him, you know, am I the ignorant one? Am I the one who's got multiple PhDs? You know, and in the all the women in the movie, you might have noticed, most of them were PhDs. And I made an effort to do that. Like, we're not saying, and nobody is saying, from the, you know, reality-based world, let's just call it that, right? From the Catholic perspective, nobody is saying women should be less educated or are dumber or any of those things. Nobody is saying that. What we are saying is it's actually ignorant. It's actually from a perspective of less education that you choose to change your body and chase after other things rather than the way your body's made. That's what's actually harmful. And it's these PhDs are saying, yeah, I mean, obviously we're all as smart as any man, but we realize that our priorities have to be correct. And it's actually undignified of us to alter our bodies for your desires.
Absolutely. And the reality is that women who are educated are having fewer children. Now, there could be multiple reasons for that. One, if you're in, you know, any form of higher education, you're probably delaying having children. Now, I have a master's degree. I didn't need abortion or contraception in order to not have children. Thank you very much. And I think a lot of women out there would say the same thing. But then you also have women who look back, like Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is one example of this. She's in your film, and she was one of the heartbroken career women who really wanted to have a baby. And after years of a lifestyle such as abortion and contraception, later on she ended up experiencing an infertility crisis, which is more the reality today among educated women, that they're looking back saying, I can't have a kid now. I don't have a partner now because I kind of either man-bashed or avoided or didn't want to commit, whatever it might be. And now I can't have that family that I really do long for.
Yeah, you look at the social stats, it's very clear. So things like IVF, in vitro fertilization, are way, way up, and the percentage of women who want to have a baby but can't is way, way up. Mm-hmm. And so you've got like 40% of women who are at the end of their childbearing years now say they have less children than they would have. So we have a system where you've got 19, 20-year-olds, women in their 20s, aborting like crazy, still over a million babies a year aborted at that level. And then you've got IVF, tens and tens of thousands of women trying to have babies through unnatural means. And I mean, what kind of culture are we living in where we're throwing away babies on one hand and desperately trying to do them in an unnatural and have babies in an unnatural way when we're older? And I just think, okay, President Macron, again, who's really educated? Like, who's looking at the facts of the situation here and who's being smart about this? It's not you.
Right. And it's interesting to even see some of the comments on some of these articles, because I see a lot of pessimism with some of the people who are among the range of individuals who think, oh, hey, yeah, you should probably have less children. We're overpopulated. The country's going to crap, you know, whatever it is, just don't reproduce. And people are commenting with this idea like, we've evolved. We no longer need marriage. We no longer have to have children. I actually had someone very Catholic comment and say this to me recently, that the reason that young millennials aren't marrying anymore is because they've evolved and they know that marriage isn't necessary.
I'll be like President Macron. Show me the millennial that in 10 years tells me that family isn't necessary and all that stuff. Yeah, we'll see how that works out.
You know, it's fascinating to me. And also, you know, the question is, well, which one would you want me to kill? The educated or uneducated woman who's criticized for how many children she has? Well, tell me, which one should I drown today, right?
Yeah.
Which one would you like to just shoot? Well, what's the difference between that and the baby being inside the womb at 9 months gestation, 8 months gestation? You name it.
It's a very anti-woman ideology, ultimately, that says only stupid women, basically, is what he's trying to say, would have a bunch of kids. And just what an ignorant statement.
How disrespectful. You know, next episode, we're actually going to be talking about Keira Knightley and some of her comments about Kate Middleton and having children, and also about what the adoption makeup looks like in the country right now and how people are just craving to have a child and they can't. The wait is so incredibly long. So that's next week. In the meantime, we're coming in talking about one organization who was banned on Twitter for an article they posted 4 years ago.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Now back to Trending with Timmery and Dawn.
Hello, friends. We are talking now about Twitter. You know, I kind of get frustrated having these conversations, Don, because yet again, another pro-life advertisement has been banned on Facebook. Our YouTube video talking about gender ideology was removed. And now Twitter ended up shutting down LifeSite News. And for those who don't know, LifeSite News is a pro-marriage and family run, basically news agency that's just pumping out content. Yeah, the content can be difficult to read, but it's truthful. Well, they ended up being pulled off of Twitter last Thursday because their account completely suspended for quote-unquote hateful conduct for an article they posted 4 years ago. That's right, 2014, on homosexual health data and STDs.
So apparently the tweet pointed out that the rise of STDs among homosexuals was primarily due to factors such as increased unprotected sex and 60% of homosexual men failing to disclose their symptoms or status to sex partners. Now, that seems like one of those scientific, biological, sociological facts that's, one, pretty easily verifiable. You can look at the data. You can say, what was the experiment? What's the science that we used to gather this stat? Is it correct? And if it's correct, what are you supposed to do with that? I mean, it's pretty, and frankly, it makes a lot of plain sense. I mean, it's one of those stats where you look at and like, yeah, that if that's true, that makes a lot of sense. And you look at the stats, is it true? I've seen nobody discount it. I think it's good science.
Yeah.
How is that hateful?
It is good science. Guess where it's coming from? The CDC,
yeah, there you go.
The Center for Disease Control, which, by the way, government websites up until just about 4 or 5 years ago often ended up promoting the fact that sexually transmitted diseases are more common and more dangerous among the homosexual community. That's when homosexual acts are being acted out on. Because why? They're not talking about the fact that they're having sex with other men. They're not wanting to disclose the fact that it's more damaging. Because guess what? I'm just going to be really blunt here. Anal sex is not how it's meant to work. In that area is meant for fecal matter, and you are more damaging toward your body when you interact with things that shouldn't be placed there.
Again, pretty common sense. Yeah, it's just pretty unhealthful. Actually, again, we don't want to get too, you know, into this, I suppose, but we've talked about this before. The whole act, the homosexual act, is just very, very dangerous, basically on every level. It's just not a healthy act. And so you are going to have increased problems on every possible level, physical, emotional. So all of those things are just, you just look at the data. It's not something where you have to bring in Bible verses or something to back you up, or the, you know, it's just like, let's just look at what's happening here, and it's not good.
I am refraining from commenting further on the physical act, which I think you actually are as well, because you guys, if you really do think about it, and I'm sorry to draw a picture for you, and especially my visual people here for a second, I know they can be scandalizing, but the bodies don't work that way. Fluids aren't meant to be exchanged there. An aggravation to certain areas can cause an increase, let's say, in bleeding, among other things that can take place. You have fluids resting around in areas where fluids aren't supposed to be, you know, interacting. And you're seeing a major increase in, let's say, syphilis, gonorrhea, HIV and AIDS. Yeah. And are we forgetting the fact, Don, that HIV and AIDS lead to death, and people have been dying, and it's something that's just still not talked about in the homosexual community. People don't want to say, yeah, I actually have a lot of friends who have died in their 30s, in their 40s.
Yeah, you get the occasional person who's honest about the whole culture, right? Occasionally. And I think of, we mentioned it before, and I know my name has totally dropped, but the people who are honest who have come out of that culture, it's very glamorized, and it's very, you know, sort of shaded over, like, oh, you know, we just love each other and party and have a good time.
Yeah,
it's not that way.
Daniel Mattson's one example. Joseph Shambra.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. Yeah. Joseph. Yeah, exactly. Read some of his stuff. It's not a pretty picture.
I really want to encourage you guys, go check out the book Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. You can actually pull up the podcast where Don and I interview Daniel Mattson, talking about his lifestyle and where he came from, and just, you know, the harm that took place to him and his body and his friendships. And, you know, one thing I really do appreciate that Daniel emphasizes is that there is love in those different relationships. You can't say that when you're in a, let's say, same-sex relationship that there's no love. That doesn't mean that it's good for you. There can always be disordered love, and the physical act is disordered, and the long-term psychological and eternal impact is disordered.
Yeah, and then one thing I appreciated about Daniel's book is that he actually paints the... And his experience is, if you can, and you got to be careful, listen to the whole thing here before turning me off. He paints the most positive picture of it, I think you could. Like, his experience is actually one of the more positive experiences, whereas for most in the community, right, in the lifestyle, let's call it that, and I think this is where Joseph Shambra is really strong on this, for most people, it's not even nearly as good as Daniel Mattson's experience. Like, there isn't even the friendship. It's just guys using each other. Yeah. And it's a very sort of just hurtful thing all the way around. Mm-hmm. And you don't even get the point where there's some friendship and where there's the... That's the picture. I mean, we do get the... In the culture, we get the sort of the, like, two guys who've lived together for a long time and have a friendship. But, yep, I mean, I get that, and it does happen. But not nearly as much as the culture actually paints it, for one thing. Yeah. And even in that, there's a problem. But unfortunately, for most of the guys in the culture, it's a very bad thing. You know, Tim Ray, I use the term reality-based group. Like, we live in a reality-based world. And I did that purposely because that's often used against conservatives, right? Like, over here in the reality-based community, we don't believe in things like God. You know, we don't believe in fairy tales. We're in the reality-based community. I'm starting to use that myself and turn it around. Because here's the thing. Articles like this, are you interested in the reality? Like, if you're running Twitter... And you're shutting down CDC stats. Are you in the reality-based community? If President Macron, like we talked about last segment, and you're talking about women who are you in the reality? No, you're not looking at the facts. And that's what we like. Let's bring the truth out. Let's just look at the facts. When we, as Catholics, we have nothing to fear from any sort of truthful endeavor. You know, whatever realm of science you want to, we're for it. You know, it's the other side of this where people are, well, we got to downplay that, which is unfortunate.
Well, and just like a little earlier in the show, we were talking about the French President Macron and how he is saying, hey, you know, only educated people have children. Well, then you're also looking at this issue now. Well, only educated people know how to silence the facts and bury the facts that within the homosexual community, the community that is physically acting out, that's not their identity, just a physical act they're living out. Sexually transmitted diseases is destroying that community, and we're continuing to see a rise. And in fact, we're seeing HIV and AIDS being pulled into the heterosexual community. Why? Because people are experimenting. They're quote unquote bisexual or non-binary now. And this is creating many issues for the Center of Disease Control. And even Bloomberg is actually featured in this 2014 article, which is a study from 2012, not even 2018. Can you imagine?
Well, you look at the in the 2018 stats?
Gosh.
I mean, they're through the roof. All of this stuff. STDs are through the roof in our culture.
Untreatable.
Untreatable because the antibiotics and stuff, they mutate. They defeat those. And so now they're all through the roof. You talked about the whole increase in like transgender and experimentation and all of that. Is that because we have a whole bunch of different type of people have been? No. It's a society where young people now, you see a huge increase in, for instance, schools. You'll see a societal, I'm trying to think of the term they used, but it's like it catches on. Like all of a sudden we see this huge increase in students who claim to be transgender or who are experimenting that weren't last year. And why is that? Well, one or two popular kids came out, and all of a sudden we've got dozens of other ones.
And kids know they can get attention for it now.
And you think, okay, so that's not only is that leading to all sorts of emotional and psychological problems, but if that leads to some sort of experimentation, now we've got the STDs on the rise. Right. Again, what a disaster.
I was just talking to a friend that has a sibling who's recently gone through a divorce. And guess what? One of their children is now saying that they are identifying as transgender. The kid is crying for help. The father's not participating in the picture. Things are a mess. The mom's struggling. And the girl's just going, pay attention to me.
This is a good point, not to switch subjects too much, but children of divorce, a lot of times they do act out in all sorts of ways, especially, mm-hmm. It doesn't actually ever end, but I think of a young girl I met last summer, and it was at camp, and the counselors just we don't know what to do with this girl. She's just so angry, and we can't get her to be a part of the group or do any activity, and we wonder maybe she's bipolar, or should we get some drugs for her or something? Well, her parents had just split. She's now being shuttled, hundreds of miles between these two. Her life's destroyed. Of course she's angry, right? Of course she's acting out. No, I don't think she's bipolar, right? I mean, she was fine last summer. Now she's the worst kid in camp. Could it be? Has something to do with her home life? Of course it does. So we have to really be aware of that, I think.
And you have to see how this all fits together. The sexual crisis is one after the other of taking babies outside of sex, taking sex outside of marriage, and now you have a fail-safe, and now you can have sex whenever you want and think it has no consequences. But the reality is when you have sex outside of marriage, you have the risk of sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, I'll have to post one of the charts where you see for every one partner that you sleep with, the number of people you're exposing yourself to, and how every sexual partner can be a carrier of STDs. They don't have to actually have it. So I'll post that out later. But this article was posted by LifeSite News. They were pulled off of Twitter on Thursday. Right away, within just a number of hours, over 7,500 people signed a petition to Twitter, and Twitter reinstated LifeSite News' account. But here's the deal. Twitter essentially ended up coming out saying, oh yeah, this was a mistake, but basically for now, because they're looking at changing their policy on Twitter so that, for example, dehumanizing language like this can no longer be posted on here. So that's a forthcoming policy on Twitter. We'll be right back on Trending, talking about some serious life issues and reminding you that voting coming up is very important.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. Now back to Trending with Timory and Dawn.
Don, there's a lot I want to cover here dealing with the abortion issue. And first, we've got to talk for just a second about how important voting is. We look to the Catechism of the Catholic Church and what the Church has said about being good citizens within society and promoting the common good, not just my individual comfort and economic status, but the common good for all. And because of that, we have a quote-unquote moral obligation to participate, for example, in our right to vote, to pay taxes, and even to defend our own country.
Yeah, I would even add to that that we have a duty to present a vision of political engagement that is Catholic.
Right? Yes.
Like, I get the sense, and I'm with you, I didn't want to vote like last election, to be honest. Just for many of the categories, it was like, I don't really see a good option here, you know, up and down the ticket. And I do, but it's not that you can't disengage from politics, right? And I think some people do, like, well, either I just got to vote up and down even for people I don't like, or I have to disengage from politics. I think there's a third way. The Catholic way is to be salt and light in the culture, and that involves engaging in politics. And if there are no politicians that you think are honorable, maybe you need to be the one that is. I mean, maybe, I don't know, you know, like, or that we need to encourage the right kinds of people to be running for office, and preaching a message that says we need the right kinds of people. For a while when I was younger, I thought, hey, politics is the answer. And then I went the other way, and I'm like, man, forget that. What a cesspool that is, you know, and I got involved in it a little bit.
And
now it's
wrong.
Like, both are wrong. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, both are completely wrong. And so I agree with you. You can't disengage. You got to be in the fight.
And it's a big shout out because we need to vote. The reality is, while the Church is not affiliated with any political party, what we are affiliated is with truth and with life. And so, yes, Catholics are sometimes knocked because they vote on issues, but the sanctity of life, the value of human life, both living and the living children in the womb, that matters. And for example, the ability to live, even if you have a terminal illness, without someone killing you off or, you know, someone participating when you're in a down moment to commit physician-assisted suicide, that matters. Marriage between one man and one woman. So while we might not agree in other certain areas, and maybe the opposing politician might be just awful, or maybe they do have some good things to say, we have to vote in terms of religious liberty, human life, marriage and family, because that is what continues a civilization and allows for ultimate freedom.
Yeah, I mean, laws matter, and so the lawmakers matter. It's interesting, what also matters, and it's unfortunate, I think, in our culture, that money matters.
Right.
And so you really, it'd be nice if we got some politicians in there who could, I think, change the situation a little bit where money doesn't matter so much. But now money matters a lot, and there's a lot of money going to increase the abortion, big abortion, if you will, that industry. It's billions and billions of dollars that are made and donated. And so, yes, watch where the money is coming from.
Right. And I mean, there's just another article I was reading the other day, and you could go through one after another, but Hollywood dumping another $40 million into very pro-abortion candidates. Because right now, you guys know this, whether it was Brett Kavanaugh, you name it, the debate lately has come down to legalized abortion. The pro-abortion movement is terrified that, quote-unquote, women are suddenly going to be forced to be homemakers, forced into poverty because they're not going to have access to abortion, forced not to be educated, according to the French President Macron. Like, this is just ridiculous. And we've got to talk about it. And so I really want to just put a shout out, you guys. Voting matters. It changes and saves lives. And policies really do matter. And I want to talk for a second. There was a cover-up during the last administration. And again, you know, this is where small policies really do make a difference, where basically minors were being shuttled to different states. So basically minors who were under federal custody were being shuttled to states where they did not have a mandated parent involvement, parent notification for abortion. And so if they were in a state and they had a minor who was pregnant, but parental notification laws were required, they were taking them to different states to abort these young children's own children.
I literally just read this within the last minute, Timory. And this should be front page. This is shocking. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you've got administration officials, like federal government officials,
yes,
taking minors who are in federal custody across state lines.
Yes.
apart from their parents' consent.
Yes.
So that they can get an abortion. I mean, somebody needs to go to jail for this.
So this is no longer the policy of the current administration. This is one of those moments where I will say I appreciate the current administration's no abortion for refugee resettlement programs, because this is the case. This was hidden in a 34-page document from the last administration where they were shuttling these kids to different states.
What were the kids doing? They're refugee
some of
kids?
Some of them in this case that we're talking about are refugee children. These are kids, so they might be here without a parent, they're held under federal custody, or maybe they've been placed with new parents within the region, say Florida, for example, and this child wants an abortion, doesn't think the parent might support them, or whatever it might be. But here's the deal, Don. You're then choosing, as a government employee, to abort this child with a young teenager who's going to have to face the aftermath for her life of that abortion. And maybe she was raped on the way. Maybe she was raped by a federal employee. Maybe she was raped by some home that's fostering her, and you just destroyed the evidence.
Yeah, the levels of evil there are through the roof. I mean, why is she not with her parents, for one thing? Why is she in federal custody? Why is she pregnant? Why is she getting... Yeah, all of them. I mean, seriously, I think that's one where that needs to be investigated. Is people need to... I guess if that was the law, I mean, yeah, thank God the law is now different, because what a disaster.
Yeah, and this is where we talk about policies, having pro-life candidates that will change small policies that are actually huge, such as the refugee resettlement program, and say, no, we don't give abortions to minors. Bottom line.
Yeah, bottom line.
Bottom line. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and really cool, I want you guys to check it out. I'll be posting a link out to it. Sad story, but awesome testimony. There was a woman and her husband who experienced a miscarriage. They ended up finding out close to about 20 weeks that for the past 6 weeks, their 12-week baby had been dead in the womb. And the woman was carrying this little baby. And it was interesting because a lot of the time after you have a miscarriage, depending on what stage, they end up doing like a DNC, which is the same as an abortion procedure, just to clear the baby who's already dead out rather than intentionally going in to kill the baby. And this mom said no, she didn't want her baby's body to be destroyed. And so she went through a process that would allow her to have her baby intact. And it was interesting because here's a baby that's just resting in the palm of her hand. And she talks about, I quote, the reverence in the room that was palpable from the nurses and doctors when she gave birth to that little dead baby.
This is one, it's a little close to home for me, but it's also one I don't know why these stories aren't more, because we actually, my wife and I had a very similar, almost identical experience with little Samuel, who was, mm-hmm. he made it to 13 weeks.
Wow.
And we held him in our hands. It looked very similar to the little picture that, I mean, a couple of things. It is a little tough to talk about, but a couple of things. One, when we went through that experience, and this is why I bring that up, there's a lot of couples that have done this, and it's sort of an underground thing. Like people don't, and I know why people don't talk about it, because it's very painful to think about. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that have gone through it, and I'm surprised there isn't more of these kind of stories, because if there was ever a real obvious, like, of course we shouldn't abort it, of course it's a baby, it's the, like, hello, the baby was just born. Yes, he's passed, but here's his body, and it's a baby, you know? And so, yeah, we did the same thing. We held him for a long time in the room, and we had the same procedure where he wasn't, you know, came out fully intact. And it's, yeah, it's like the non-reality community. You have to be willfully blind, I feel like, to look at that. And I think a lot of people are, frankly, that to look at these kind of stories, to hear these experiences, and then to say, oh, but yes, of course we can kill that baby. You know, we can dismember that child. I mean, it's sickening, really.
Well, and what a testament that little baby's life is to the parents, to everyone in the room. Like, I am a human being, and I have not died for nothing.
Right.
And I mean something to someone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We look forward to being in heaven one day and have our family, you know, all together, because, of course, it's a little baby.
Yeah,
even at 12, 13 weeks.
And 30% of pregnancies actually end in
miscarriage. Yeah, it's very common, very common. It doesn't make it less painful.
Right.
And I think it is something we need to talk about a little bit more, because, you know, the pain that people, I think, carry around, maybe unnecessarily. I mean, it's not that you're not denying the pain, but it's helpful to have other people come alongside and say, yeah. And we were amazed. People we didn't know just coming out of the woodwork, like friends of ours. Oh, we didn't know. Yes, we, you know, we did it once, twice, three times. Sometimes it happens, you know. And so, yeah, it's sad, but I'm glad to see those pictures.
And thank you, because I'm almost in tears just hearing this. And I can't imagine from the perspective of a father of one of these children. It's so hard to sometimes open up about that. And I have a lot of friends who have experienced miscarriages over the last few years. And some of the most difficult moments for them has sometimes been the husband tuning out when that happens, because they can't handle it. And they don't know what to do, especially when it's maybe the first of their children.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and if it... I mean, it would almost be extra hard, I think. You know, Sammy was our first son. We had two girls, so he was the third. And then Justice came along after missing his brother. But with the first one, it would be hard. And so, yeah, I would encourage guys, hey, if you've gone through that, it's okay. There's a lot of other guys out there, too, that, yeah, you're right, we're guys. We don't really necessarily know how to how to handle it or communicate, but it is super painful. And it's okay to sort of share that, I think.
Right. And just because you're silent as it's happening doesn't mean you're not feeling it.
No, right.
And I've noticed some of the women, he's just quiet, or he maybe walked away for a bit. He's mourning, and he's doing it differently than maybe you are.
Right. Yes.
So please, you know, remember, check out this article that I'm going to post, but the testament to human life and the stories that are so real that say life matters and it impacts men and women and families.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. Now back to more trending. Here's Timory Millington and Don Johnson.
You guys, all the time, I get emails, texts, phone calls, whether it's from a listener, a friend, a family member who... The Pope said this, or church teaching has changed on X because I saw this interview from this secular news group quoting two words from a lengthy interview on same-sex marriage or whatever it might be. Well, Don, I saw a picture this week, and the picture was of the Pope wearing his normal papal cross, but then also a cross with the rainbow on it. And right away, you could assume
the Pope's gay. Can I say that? I probably can't say that.
Oh my gosh. Should we edit that out? Oh my gosh.
This is why you don't have me on the show anymore, Timory. That's
Kick
what
them
I mean.
Out of
you
here.
Know.
So let's continue the conversation. That's fine. But that's the assumption.
Yes.
And we're laughing because, one, these are the conversations that people end up having. Two, I get it. There's a lot of discomfort and frustration toward the Pope right now with the different issues that are happening. So some people might take it a little backhanded. You meant it as, well, of course he's gay if he's wearing a rainbow
cross.
I
probably shouldn't have said that because now it's going to come out, right? Now somebody's going to hear just that little clip and they're going to be like, Don said it. I heard it. We all know it's true. And actually, I mean, there's several levels of this story that really, I think, are pretty good. But that's sort of the first one, like jumping to conclusions about a particular topic before actually researching it is absolutely huge on the internet. Okay. I mean, I've got several just within the last week, Timory. People, you know, we talked about just earlier in the show about like Facebook and Twitter. Sometimes they'll censor things.
Yes.
All right. Legitimately, they do. Okay. However.
We're going to be censored on Catholic radio for saying this, Don. Continue.
Okay. So, but I've had two people this last week. They're just mad and they're emailing me saying, Don, the social networks are after you. They're doing something. They're censoring you. And one was we had a screening that for one reason or another had to get canceled. And so I deleted the event. You know, like I took the event off my Facebook page. And all of a sudden I saw this big post. There's like this huge post like Twitter, Facebook is censoring Don. And why won't they show this event? And I'm like, because the event got canceled. They're not censoring me. And then almost the same. There was some video of the trailer for Unprotected, right? So the trailer, they're like, Don, they took your trailer down. It's not. No, YouTube had gone down. Like the entire network was off. I don't know if you remember that for a few minutes. Okay. This last week, the entire network got dropped. And so, yeah, when they pulled up the website, the video is not there. Nobody's censoring anybody in either of those situations. You know, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation. You don't need to get all upset and angry, and you certainly don't need to go on social media like posting about this, right?
You're like bad press.
Before you know. And this is one of those things, like, be very careful about jumping to conclusions about particular topics. What it does, it's like the cry wolf thing. Like, now the next time Facebook or YouTube does actually do something that's I'm probably not going to listen as much because I know sort of that you jump to conclusions, right?
Well, and you know, I have to tell you too, working in the pro-life movement and the crisis pregnancy centers, almost every single time we submit a pro-life ad for Facebook, it always is censored, and most of the time it never ends up making its way up. So the thing is that when people start crying wolf, it prevents the real stories from being heard. And the real story is this: young teenage girls are on Facebook and Instagram, and they are pregnant, and they're trying to decide whether or not to kill their unborn child. And crisis pregnancy centers have the resources to offer and help, but they are being censored.
They're censored.
Do you hear that?
The Gosnell movie got censored this last week. He had a hard, very hard time trying to get press and trying to get onto Facebook. So it does happen, but you have to approach that in the way that doesn't make you look like you're just, you know, crazy person over there, right?
Right.
Like, you're like, no, legitimately, you got... So just be very... And I think this is one of those, like, so if you're yelling about the Pope wearing the rainbow cross... And you're convinced that you're right about this, and it turns out you're not. It turns out the rainbow cross is totally fine.
That's what I was going to say. Everyone's sitting here going like, okay, you still haven't explained it. The Pope, maybe I'm questioning, is wearing a rainbow cross. Yeah, it's fine. It's actually has to do with the logo of the host state or country for World Youth Day, Panama, and what their Latin America Youth Ministry's logo is.
Yeah, it's the Latin American Youth Ministry. Green represents the region Mexico and Central America. Yellow represents the Caribbean region. Red represents the Andean region. And blue represents the Southern Cone region. That's their symbol. Has been for a while, apparently. They gave the Pope the cross. I guess he graciously wore it. Nothing untoward about it.
And, you know, and part of me is like, maybe they should have picked a different color scheme in today's day and age.
Yes, quite possible.
But
agreed.
At the same time, right. I will say this. I take my sister's phone the other day and I look at the screen and she's got full on rainbow on her cell phone. Okay, I know where she stands on these issues, not because of what I think that she should stand for, what she's been surrounded by, but because she herself will vocalize this. And so I go, Gabby, are you trying to take the rainbow back or something? And she takes her phone. She's like, the rainbow is mine. The rainbow. And she is going on like, I am not letting them take the rainbow to me. Like, she is going on and on. She's like, no, I have the rainbow on my phone. I know what it stands for. People know what I believe in. They can think what they want to think.
Right, right. I see both sides, right? I think when I look at the logo, for example, of the youth ministry in Latin America, it actually doesn't look very rainbowy, right? I mean,
no.
It's actually pretty legitimately just different colors, and you've got South America. The way they arranged it on the little cross, yes, a little more rainbowy. They're probably, I don't know, who knows what they're thinking? I think in other parts of the world, the rainbow is not as tightly associated either with the homosexual movement like it is in America.
Yes.
So there's, you got to take that into account as
well.
Well,
in the reality, Latin America and even parts of Africa, they use a lot of color in their art, in their clothing, in their worship, very different from how we do here in the United States. Grant, have we seen different places in our country and others with, you know, what would seem like animal rights being projected on the Vatican or the rainbow being projected onto the White House? Yes. Are those things appropriate? You know, that's where it feels like an agenda is being pushed. The Pope is not gay, as you said, Don, and the Pope is not able to change church teaching here. And this is what I want to let each of you in on. This is a little secret of the faithful Catholics. Catholic church teaching cannot change.
I had somebody ask me about this the other day. They said, not Catholic. And they're like, so, I mean, are they going to change this whole teaching on contraception? I said, no, they're not. And if it ever happens, and it won't, but if it ever did, that would actually be something that would cause me to question the whole deal because it can't change.
And or so, question, I'm sorry, but like the uneducated or ill will individual, whether it's a clergy member or an organization touting the Catholic name who's saying otherwise.
Oh yeah, no. That's my, like, they're not teaching the Catholic faith. That's the difference between like a mega church pastor who has his own church and can teach what he wants and that's what that church believes. Catholic church doesn't operate that way. Mm-hmm. Even if a bishop or whoever says something if they say it, it's contrary to the teaching of the church. Well, they're wrong, right? Yeah. That's just the bottom line. And so we have this standard of teaching within the church. Do certain practices change? Right? Yes, over time, we've changed the way the liturgy operates. Yes, all that stuff. But doctrines don't change. The thing like contraception, it's not going to change. I can almost guarantee it. You know, call me when it does, because it's not going to happen.
If we're not on the airwaves next week, you'll know why. Because I might get myself in trouble here, because what we're saying is the truth. And the fact that the church cannot change its teaching. It is based on sound truth, revealed truth by God. It's not changing. That being said, I will be, and I wasn't going to talk about this, but, you know, I think that I am going to, here in San Diego, my home diocese, we have some challenges where our own bishop has been named as having known about former Cardinal McCarrick's sexual promiscuity with seminarians and the sexual abuse of children. And so our diocese has had, according to the Vigano letter, it's claimed that Bishop McElroy knew these things. There have been listening, quote unquote, listening sessions in the Diocese of San Diego where the bishop shows up. They have, you know, these services where you pray and sing, and can you tell I've not really been into it? And then you have, you know, table round group discussions, and then each table presents a question to the bishop. And they were really hard to go to. I went more so to listen to where other people are at, more so than, unfortunately, to hear what my bishop had to say, because like many of you, I think we're questioning, well, what's true right now? And we don't know who to trust fully. And when there seems to be evidence that you knew about this and said nothing, there's frustration. But what I'm seeing, Don, is that in these meetings in San Diego, it's the young Orthodox pro-marriage and family individuals who are being kicked and drug out of the meetings. And I saw one young man, apparently a question wasn't being asked that he wanted to have asked. He ended up standing up and loudly trying to ask the question respectfully, but loudly. Everyone was listening. The question could have been heard. They could have just let the question, sure, it wasn't following their rudimentary guidelines for how this had to be, but security card ended up coming up and bumping him, and you know, he was trying to stand his ground, and they kind of pulled and drug him out of the room.
Oh, wow.
And my heart was breaking. Why are the young people of the church who are standing with what the church teaches being silenced today?
Does anyone in the world think that that's a way to attract that people are going to stay in the church? Like, this is the message you want to proclaim to those young people who want to get to the bottom of these things?
That's
flabbergasting. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I mean, it was happening time after time of young Orthodox Catholics being pulled out. And it breaks my heart, because here's the youth synod going on, and people are talking about watering down the conversation about homosexuality, not changing the church teaching, but maybe changing how we soften the language. And people like Cardinal Sarah and people like Archbishop Chaput are saying, no, young people want authenticity. Young people want truth. Young people want to live out true, strong, married lives.
Listen, people don't get converted to the church. And I've studied conversion for the last, you know, several years. They do not convert to the church because it's appealing or because it's watered down. They convert to the church because they're convinced it's true and that the church stands for truth, even in the midst of a culture that doesn't. That's what attracts people. It's not the other way around.
And there may be some false prophets who teach otherwise, you guys. And we have to know our Catechism of the Catholic Church, entrench ourselves in the books of the Bible, so that we too can teach, love, understand, and know who is speaking for what the church has and always will teach.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit timory.com.